Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Lamed Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. We begin today's shiur on Daf Kuf Lamed Tes, the second line from the top. Before we begin the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, where we've written Shoresh Hatzoros, the source of our troubles and tribulations, Dayonim Rishoyim. It's a function of the evil judges. misjudgment, corruption in the judicial system. The Tanaic source that opens our Gemara lasts quite a few lines, as you can see the frame that indicates thusly. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi ben Elisha Omer. Imro Isa Dor, if you see a generation, Shitzoros Rabo Isbo Isolov, that a lot of troubles afflict it, say Uvdok B'dayone Yisrael, go out and check the judicial system, the judges of Israel. Shekol Puronus Sheboli Olam, all retribution that comes upon the world, Lo Bo Elo Bishvil Dayone Yisrael. It comes as a result of this corrupt justice system, or corrupt judges. Shenemar, we have a posuk now, and we've indicated that this posuk lasts 5 lines. It's a rather unusual, lengthy posuk as far as a Gemara quotation. It's taken from Micha, Perek Gimel, Psukim Tes through Yud Aleph. Shimuna Zos Roshe Beis Yankiv Uktsine Beis Yisrael. The Novi is saying, "Hearken, O the house of Jacob, and the Ktsine, the leaders of the house of Israel, Hamisavim Mishpat, those that disdain." Have to'eva is something that is reprehensible. So they disdain justice. Ves kol hayishorah yakeshon. All that is straight. They twist. Bone Zion bedomim v'yushalayim be'avla. They build Zion with blood and Jerusalem with corruption. Roshea b'shochad yishpotu v'kohaneh b'mechir yoru u'nevi'eh b'kesef yiksomu v'al Hashem yishainu. This pasuk contains references to the corruption. The roshah, the heads, b'shochad, through accepting bribery, yishpotu. After accepting payment, then they judge. The kohanel, literally the priests, but the kohanim were also charged with offering legal decisions. B'mechir, through payment, yoru, only if after they're paid will they issue a halachic ruling. And Nevi'eha, its prophets, most likely we're dealing with the realm of the false prophets, but Nevi'eha b'kesef yiksomu, after getting payment, so they'll do their magic. Ve'al Hashem yishenu, and after all, they rely on the Almighty. And what that means, if you look in the Meforshim on the Pasuk, you'll discover that we're talking at a time when the Beis HaMikdash was built, was amongst the, it was a part of the Jewish fabric, and they had this false reliance on the existence of the Beis HaMikdash. That gave them the feeling that we can do whatever we want. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't going to punish us. He's certainly not going to want to destroy his temple. So they saw the Beis HaMikdash as a license for doing and behaving any way they wanted. That's the end. This quote, Al Hashem Yishoyinu, they relied on Hashem. The Gemara continues, Rishoyin Hain, they were wicked. El Shetol Bitchonam B'mishomar B'hoyolam. Though they were wicked, their faith and security was all based on the one who said, and the world shall be. In other words, on the Almighty. Lefikach mevi HaKadosh Baruch Aleihem gimel poronos keneged gimel averos shebiyadam. Therefore, the Kodesh Baruch Hu brings upon them three forms of punishment in keneged, as a result of the three sins that were in their hands. Shenemar lochein, and now we have a pasuk which is also the continuation of that, of what we just quoted. This is pasuk Yud Beis. Lochein biglalchem, as therefore as a result of the averos that we mentioned before in pasuk Yud Aleph. So the result will be Tzion Soda Techaresh Yerushalayim Iyin Tiyeh V'Harabais Levomos Yar. We've noted 3 points over here. Tzion Zion Soda Techaresh will be plowed up as a field. Yerushalayim Iyin. Iyin is a pile of rubble. So the Jerusalem will become a pile of rubble. And V'Harabais Levomos Yar. And the Temple Mount, Bomos Yar, for our purposes, is very similar to the idea of Iyin Tiyeh. Bomos literally are high places in the forest. But it's a reference to destruction and mounds, as one will discover if you look in the Meforshim, look in the commentaries on the Posuk. V'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashri Shechinos Al Yisrael Ad Sheicholu Shoftim V'Shoftim Roim Yisrael. And the Kodesh Baruch will not cause his divine presence to dwell upon Israel until Achi Cholu, means until there is finished off, completed, removed completely. The Shoftim, the judges, and the Shotrim, the sheriffs or police officials that are evil from amongst Israel. Shenemar, the Pasuk, and this is from a different Navi from Yeshaya Perek Aleph, Psukim Chof Hei and Chovov. The pasuk says, "V'yashiva yodi olayich, I will return my hand upon you." Ve'etzrof kabor sigoyich. Etzrof is an expression indicating purification. Kabor, bor is a type of cleansing agent. We can call it a type of soap. Sigoyich is a reference to your dross. So until your filth is cleaned away, v'asiro kol b'diloyich. And I will remove all of bedilayach. Also, is a type of is residue. It's when you purge metals of their debris. So the debris is referred to as the bedilayach. So I will remove all of your debris. V'yashiva shoftach v'rishona, and then I will restore your judges like at first. V'yotzeach kibat filah. And your counsel like the beginning. In other words, a return to a more pristine state. But all of that is after the removal of the evil judges and corruption. Omar Ula, Ein Yerushalayim, and there's another girsa that you see on the sides, Ein Yisrael, Nifdeh, so the Jewish people won't be redeemed, Ela Bitztaka, only through the act of charity. Shenemar Tzion b'mishpat tipodeh v'shaveh b'tzdaka. Zion will be redeemed through mishpat, through justice, but its returnees through charity. There are different ways to approach this pasuk. One might very well be that the rebuilding of Zion will be b'mishpat. In other words, that's through letter of the law. In other words, the Zion represents the Almighty's dwelling place in this world. And the Almighty, obviously, deserves, by letter of the law, to have a dwelling place on this world. The fact that we messed up along the way, that's not the Almighty's problem. So the rebuilding of Zion, which represents the seat of the divine presence in this world, that's by letter of the law, that's through justice. However, the redemption of Shaveh, of the returnees, the Jewish people themselves, that's Bitztaka. That would be through the loving kindness or the generosity of the Almighty. Another take on the pasuk might be more from our perspective. that if we straighten out our justice system and our judges, so then we will deserve redemption. And if we, the people, practice the act of charity, so then we will be redeemed. We continue. Omar Rav Popo, I Batli Yehiri Batli Ambushi. Yehiri are the haughty ones. So we refer to them as the Bali Gaiva. So if they cease to be, then Batli Ambushi. Let's take a look at Rashi on the second narrow line of Rashi toward the top. Bali Ambush, Batli Ambushi, Ibatlu Masitim Umadichin Hamasniim Oisanu. Those that try to cause others to hate us, those are the masitin, the ones that arouse the antagonism of others toward us, so they will cease to be. The Gemara continues, I batli dayoni, if the evil judges cease, batli gzirpati. The Rashi explains on Gezirpati, the Nogse Shotre Ovde Kochavim. These are oppressive Gentile forces. So that if wicked judges cease from Israel, so then the evil Gentile forces will cease. You can see from this very very profound comment and observation that that which we, the Jewish people, suffer from, we in effect bring upon ourselves. And that involves the Yehiri, the Bali Gaiva, the haughty ones, and the corrupt judges from amongst us, from amongst the Jewish people. They are the ones that cause the, let's say, external forces to work against us. Something to ponder at great depth. The Gemara continues and explains or gives a basis for Rav Popo's observation, and we go over with the numbers. You can see the 1 and the 2 correspond to the numbering we already have. Ibatli Yehiri Batli Amgushi. That's what Rav Popo said. So that's Dichtiv V'etzrof Kibor Sigayach. This is a quote from the Pasuk we saw above from Yeshaya, that I will cleanse you like that which is clean through soap. I will remove your sigayach, your dross. E batli dayoni, batli gzirpati. And that was the second point the Rav Papa made, k'dichtiv. This is a pasuk from Tzifanya, Paragimel Pasuk Tesvav. Hesir Hashem mishpatayach pino oyvech. Once the mishpatayach has to do with the corrupt judges are removed, so I will remove your enemies. We'll saw an editorial note, something to ponder very deeply, and that is that there is a tendency on many to point a finger at Gentiles as being oppressive and hateful and vengeful, etc., and so forth, and there may be a certain element to that, but on a deeper level, it could very well be that in many instances, we, the Jewish people, through our behavior and corruption, are bringing that upon ourselves. So it behooves us to engage in more introspection, more than finger-pointing and blaming as time goes by. We look at the side of the Gemara, introducing a new geometric form, the Mivneh, the structural note, features the bow tie. Sidra Shel Memro Shel Rav Meloi. We have a series of comments made by Rav Meloi. You'll notice the second bow tie looks a little bit different. It has a dotted top to it. That's only because it's a quote from Rav Elazar ben Meloi, who would appear to be the son of the featured speaker in this series. But all the same, we're including him in the series. The Gemara continues. Omar Rav Meloi, Mishum Rav Elazar Berab Shimon. Mai Dichtiv Shovar Hashem Matei Rishoyim Shevet Moishlim. What is meant by this pasuk in Yeshaya? Perek Yudal Pasuk He. And the Gemara breaks it down. You can see we continue with our underlining, which we want to feature the quote, and then following that, the explanation. Shovar Hashem Matei Rishoyim. Elu, literally, Hashem breaks the staff of the wicked. So, Elu Hadayonim Shinasu Makil Lechaznehem. To appreciate this, we'll look at Rashi. Shinasu Makil Lechaznehem Leshamoshehem. The Shamoshehem are their servants, their officers. Noislim Yad Vahavion Lehem Lechuzik Lomar. The Dayonim, the judges, strengthen the sheriffs to give them strength to say, Lo Eya Shliach Vazman is Plung Lebezdin. I won't serve as the emissary to summon so and so to court in Lo Tarbe Scharan, unless you increase, unless there's an increase of my fee, of my wages. The Achar Psak Din, and then after the judgment is ruled, Lo Erdenu Likones Le Mashkono. I won't carry out the ruling. I won't rule over him to enter his place to take whatever collateral needs to be taken unless I receive more money. So the Pusuk is describing the judges that seem to strengthen these sheriffs in their claims for more payment for services. The Gemara continues, Shevet Moishlim, Elu Talmidei Chachamim Shebemishpochos Hadayonim. That's the first of Tupshotim. The reference here is to scholars that are in the families of these corrupt judges. Rashi explains, Shevet Moishlim, Makil Egroifim, Shel Moishlim. What does that mean? Hainu Dayonim Rishoyim, the wicked judges, Shetamidichom Shemishbuchoisom Lohem Lamakil Egroif. The scholars in their families serve as sticks and fists. What is that? Sha'al Yideim Hoyim Amidim Oison Umechapin Alehen. That through these scholars, these Tamidichom, the seemingly Torah scholars, would serve to back up these wicked judges and cover for them, the Oisin Sanigorin Lidverim, and they would back up and serve as a defense for their corrupt rulings. So the Pasuk is describing a very, very unfortunate, corrupt society where even the Torah scholars are serving to back up the corrupt judges. The next explanation, Marzutra Omar, Elu Tamidei Chachamim Shemelamdin Hilchos Tzibur LeDayonei Bor. The Pasuk of Shevet Moishlim that Yeshaya Yudalid made reference to are the Torah scholars that teach Hilchos Tzibur, the laws concerning the conduct, public conduct, to Dayonei Bor, to ignorant judges. Rashi says, "L'dayonei bor shavtochas oisan tamid chachomim ma'amidim v'ayonei bor lodun es kol haba v'harbe dinim she'enim lochem bohen umaten oisan." The ignorant judges get their strength from promises or being backed up by tamidei chachomim. The Gemara continues, Omar Reb Elozer ben Moloi, Mishum Reish Lakish. He quotes Reish Lakish, says, Mai dichtiv ki kapechem nigoalu badam, vesposechem be'avon, sifsasechem dibru sheker, lishoinchem avlo tege. Now the Gemara breaks this pasuk down. Again, following the underlining, you can see the different sections of the pasuk that will be explained. Ki kapechem nigoalu badam, literally is your hands are filled with blood. Elu Hadayon, that's a reference to the judges. Now, what is hands being full of blood? How is that connected to judges? So Rashi explains, Kapechem, in the middle of the Rashi commentary, Kapechem negol b'dam, Elu Hadayonim, she Kapein pshutin l'kabel shochat, their judges' hands are stretched out to receive bribes, umatenes hadin, and as a result of the bribery, they twist the justice. And in twisting justice, what happens? The noitlin momoin min habaylim shelo kadin. They then extract money from those that don't really have to pay, that are not guilty of paying. They take money from them. And they pay the litigant against them. It's tantamount to taking away his life breath from him. In Judaism, especially when you learn through numerous different Gemaras, you see the importance that the Torah assigns to money. Again, as we say many times in our Gemara marking Shurim, not that one should pursue money with his life breath and make that his life goal, but when one has money, one has to treat it very seriously. And taking money away from someone is tantamount to killing him. So that the judges are filled with blood is a reference to corrupt rulings causing the misappropriation of funds taken from one undeservedly given to another. So the victim of this corrupt justice system is described as if he were killed. The pasuk also said that Sposechem be'avon, your fingers are full of iniquity. Elu sofrei hadayonim, those are the court scribes that prepare corrupt documents. Sifsosechem dibu sheker, elu orchei hadinim hadayonim. The pasuk says your lips speak falsehoods. This is a reference to orchei hadayonim. In modern Hebrew, the term orchei adam is a reference to lawyers. Rashi explains a very apt description. Shemlamdin es bale dinim liton. They teach the defendants how to make their claims. In other words, they're being taught how to make their claims would indicate that they're not the actual true claim or true defense, but something that's taught or twisted. And lishonchem avlo tege, and the obvious result of being taught to make false claims is the pasuk says your lishonchem, your tongues, avlo iniquity tege, shall speak. In other words, the speaking of lies and falsehood. These are the litigants or the defendants themselves, the bali dinim, the ones that are coming to litigate one against the other. The omar rav meloi mishum rav yitzchok magdilo. That's where he's from. That's part of his name. Rav Yitzchok Magdalo. Miyom Shapirish Yosef Me'echov. Lo Toam Tam Yayin. And as we mentioned, where this is another part of the series of Meloi comments, he says that when Yosef separated from his brothers, so from that day onwards, for many years, he didn't taste any wine. Dechtiv Ulekodkoid Nezir Echov. In the pasuk that refers to Yosef, it says it describes him as a nozir. A nozir is one who abstains from wine. Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina Amar Af Hein Lo Tamu Tam Yayin. Not only Yosef didn't drink wine, but his brothers did not eat taste of wine from that day on. Dichtiv. The pasuk says when they met up, eventually many years later, it says Vayishtu Vayishkiru Imo. They drank and became intoxicated with him. Michlal, it would indicate to us that the anu idno loy, that until then they didn't drink. The first time they drank was when they met him many years later in Mitzrayim. V'idach is a reference to Rav Meloi, because Rav Yossi, Rav Hanina, he added to that which Rav Meloi said. Meloi said that only Joseph didn't eat taste from the wine. Rav Yossi Rav Chanina says they too did not. So what does Rav Meloi do with the pasuk that Rav Yossi cited? So v'idach, that's him and Rav Meloi, what does he say? Shikrus hu delo havi. As far as the brothers are concerned, over those years, it's true they did not become intoxicated. However, shtio mehavi, but they did drink, as opposed to Yosef, who didn't even drink wine all those years of separation. V'amar Meloi, b'schar v'ro'acho v'somach b'libo, Aharon, the brother of Moshe Rabbeinu, upon Aharon's seeing Moshe's return from Midian, with the charge of leading the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So Hashem says to Moshe, and he will see you, and he will be happy. And the point here is, even though Aharon, first of all, he was older than Moshe Rabbeinu, and Rashi points out, secondly, that he received prophecy before Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, he had certain attributes that would have placed him ahead of Moshe Rabbeinu, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu was charged with the honor and distinction of becoming the leader. And with all that, Aaron was happy. So because of his this form of humility, Zochel Lechoshen HaMishpat Al Libo. So you have a connection here between Belibo, this Vesomach Belibo, and the Lechoshen HaMishpat is a reference to the Kohen Gadol's breastplate, which was, without getting into any detail over here, which was a symbol of great honor. And he, as a result of that, was going to merit wearing this breastplate, which had different miraculous aspects to it. As we say, without getting into detail, we'll simply point out that measure for measure, because Aaron demonstrated this humility, he merited having this distinction. Shalchulei b'nei Bashkar l'Levi. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's just note on the side the Nosei. We've written a very general type topic heading, but it gives a flavor of the Gemara coming up. Hachmara b'psak, stringent rulings l'fi she'enon b'nei Torah, because we were dealing with a situation of people that were not careful with their Torah learning. They were not careful. They were not b'nei Torah. They weren't people that took halacha seriously. And as a result, rulings that didn't reflect letter of the law were given to them, but rather extreme stringency was issued so that the halacha would protect itself against these non-B'nai Torah. So the Gemara continues. The B'nai Bashkar, so people of a place, Bashkar is the name of a place, they sent a question to Levi, and their question, they have actually three questions appear. Kilo Mahu, Kshusa B'Karmo Mahu, Meis B'Yomtov Mahu. Three questions. The kilo is an issue of a bed canopy. Mahu, is it mutter to set it up on Shabbos? This is a topic that we've spoken about in recent dapim. Kshusa b'karmo mahu. Kshusa is a type of plant. Rashi says it's is himlon, and in some of the Rashi explanatory books, himlon is translated as hops, an ingredient that's used in beer manufacture. And Rashi says, "Shigodal hehege." Hehege is a type of lowly bush. Mahu b'karmo, and the question here is a kilayim related question: the prohibition of planting in a vineyard different were non-trees, non-tree vegetation. So that is classified by the term yerek. So the question they ask is, what about the planting of the kashusa plant amongst vines? Yereku v'kilayim b'kerem, Rashi explains, is it classified, is this kashusa plant considered a yerek, and hence it would represent a prohibition of mixed breeding of crops, the mixing of yerek in a vineyard? Oy, ilonhu, when it comes to trees, there is no kilayim prohibition of having trees planted, different trees planted in the vicinity of vines, of grapevines, and therefore, if it's an ilonhu, then vieno kilayim bekerem. So their question is, how do we classify the kshusa with regard to a vineyard? And the third question is, meis b'yontov mahu, the burial of the dead on yontov. That issue will become clearer later in the Gemara. So Ada Oziel, Noch Nafshei Delevi, the emissary that was sent with the question, by the time he got there, he died. Levi died. Omar Shmuel the Rav Menashia. Shmuel says to Rav Menashe, "I Chachimus Sholach Lehu." He says, "If you Chachimus, if you know the answers, so send to them. Send them the answers." So it would appear from this Gemara that in the absence of Levi, so Rav Menashe was requested to send the answers to the Bnei Bashkar. Sholach Lehu Kila. As far as Kila is concerned, Chazarnu Al Kol Tzidei. Before we go any further in the Gemara, let's point out we have triangles and house markings that are going to appear on the side under our Mivneh heading. The triangles represent Sholosh Tshuvos, L'Sholosh Sheilos, Shel B'nei Bashkar, the three answers. So we'll answer. The first is Kila. You see the second triangle two lines later, Tshusa B'Karmo. And the third triangle is the second line from the end at the beginning of the line, Mace. Three issues they asked will be responded to. And then we will notice a house marking, and the house is going to highlight, you'll see each time, you'll see the word Lefi in a house marking, two of them on this Omid, and the next on the top of Omid Beis, you'll notice six lines from the top, the word Lefi again. Each time, the Gemara will be asking, why did he send the answers that we see in the triangles when a different, more lenient answer could have been given? The Gemara will answer each time that they were not Bnei Torah. We noted on the side, Hezber Lahachmara Bechol Sholosh HaSholosh. The Gemara will explain the reason for the stringent ruling when an alternative ruling could have been given. And the Gemara will tell you, Lefi Sheinu Bnei Torah, because they were not careful with their observance of Halacha. So now that we know the structure of the Gemara, let's continue. The first question involved the bed canopy. So Rav Menashe, who sent back the answers, said, "We checked out Chazanah called Sidei Kila. We checked out all the different aspects of Kila v'lomotzinu lo tzadhef, and we found no basis of leniency." The Gemara asks, "V'lishlech lehu k'daromi bar Yecheskel? Why couldn't Rav Menashe have sent to them that which Rami Bar Yecheskel said back on Kuf Lamed Ches Omed Aleph? Rami Bar Yecheskel had said that if a bed canopy, albeit rolled up, was placed on the poles above the bed from Erev Shabbos, and it had a cord, a draw cord attached to it, you can pull on the draw cord on Shabbos, provided that the material was set up on the frame above the bed from Erev Shabbos. So could he not have sent that to them, which would have represented a possibility of enjoying the benefiting from a kilah on Shabbos?" So the Gemara answers, why did he not send to them the teaching of Rami Bar Yecheskel? Lefi she'enon b'nei Torah, because the b'nei Bashkar were not careful with their halachic observation. And when you're dealing with a society or people that are not careful, you have a situation of if you give them a little bit of an opening, they'll go much further. So we didn't want to give them any heter, any opening. The pun, by the way, intended, because when dealing with opening, you're dealing with the opening of the bed canopy. So they didn't want to give them any element of leniency. There, by the way, is a very profound point made over here in this Gemara, and that is that when a person hears legal rulings, even to this day, one has to look into the background or the circumstances of what ruling is being made, because the one who is issuing a psak, not only does he know, or not only is he expected to know the written law, but he also has to take into consideration the circumstances around the issue that he is ruling upon. So from this Gemara, you see an illustration of that even though the halacha gives gives room for leniency, the legal ruling that was issued did not reflect that because of, we'll say, extenuating or additional considerations. And in this case, the fact that they were not B'nai Torah. We continue in the Gemara. Kshusa B'karma. What did he answer regarding the kshusa in the vineyard? So he says irbuva. Irbuva literally it represents a mixing up. But for us it means it represents a kilayim problem. That there is a kilayim problem involving the kshusa in a vineyard. Question. Valishlach lu kedei Rabbi Tarfon. Could he not have sent to them a ruling based on Rabbi Tarfon de Sanya? In the following source, we see an element of leniency. We won't see the leniency in the source. It's in this. We'll have to learn the source plus the Gemara that follows. So Kishus, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Ein Kilayim Bekerem. Rabbi Tarfon has a much more lenient approach, and he says the Kishus is not classified as a Yerek, and hence it would not be a Kilayim problem in a vineyard. The Chachomim Omer, Kilayim Bekerem. The Chachomim are strict. The Kaimolon, and we hold, Kol HaMekel Ba'aretz, when you have a Machlokas regarding Kilayim, with regard to Eretz Yisrael, Halacha k'moisei b'chutz l'aretz. That lenient opinion will become the authority to follow when dealing with areas outside of Eretz Yisrael. So from this context, we can conclude that the Bashkar, who were the people that sent the question, were people outside of Eretz Yisrael. Being that the case, there would have been nothing wrong for Rav Menashia to have shared with them Rabbi Tarfon's take on this, namely that the Kishus is not classified as a Yerek. So why did he not send that to them? Lefi She'enon B'nai Torah, because they are not B'nai Torah. They're not people careful with the Torah and with Halacha. The Gemara we have here a bracketed section, and the brackets are here for skipping purposes, simply to enable us to maintain the series of answers that were being given to the questions. And therefore, right after the brackets, which last only three lines, you can see at the beginning of the second line from the bottom another triangle regarding the mace, the issue of the corpse and the need for burial. So that will be answered. Within the brackets, there are several opinions, and we have a double underline to indicate each one of them. And we've written on the side of the Gemara, Deos, Bezrias, Kshusa, Bekarma, different opinions regarding the planting of the Kshusa in a vineyard, Bekesher, Lekilayim. We continue in the bracketed section, knowing the structure ahead of us. Machriz Rav. Rav announced, Taiman, Deboi, Lemizra, Kshusa, Bekarma, Lizra. He who wants to plant Kshusa in a vineyard should go ahead and do so. Rav Amram Chasida Mangit Iluya. Rav Amram, the Chasida, the pious one, he took a very different approach. Mangit, he would lash anyone who would plant Kshusa in a vineyard. Rav Misharshia Yohiv Le Pruta Latinok Nohri Vizora Le. Rav Mishashio took a middle ground. He would offer a pruta as a coin to a child, a Gentile child, to plant kshusa in a vineyard. Question, v'litein lei l'tinok Yisrael, why not give the coin to a young Jewish kid to do that? No, that he wouldn't do. Osi l'misrach. Misrach is to continue. He would continue, meaning if the child got used to planting kshusa nekerim as a minor, he would continue doing so as an adult, so as to prevent the child thinking that that's okay, so he wouldn't offer the payment to a Jewish child. Another question, another suggestion, v'litein lei l'godol nohri, why did he choose specifically a child that was a nohri, a Gentile? Why not give it to an adult Gentile, give him the money to plant the kshusa for him in the vineyard? The Gemara answers, osi l'chlufei b'Yisrael. The fear is that if we see payment made to the adult Gentile, people will think that any adult, including an adult Jew, would be allowed to do it. The Rashi at the bottom is very important to understand what just took place. Yoiv Pruto Lutinuk Nochi Kosovar, he was of the opinion, namely Rav Misharshi was of the opinion, the Chutzlar Shori, that the planting of Kshusa in a vineyard is allowed. In other words, you, technically speaking, you can directly do that. Umiu kol kama de efshir mishani the shelo yumedu lahokel. However, any opportunity that you have to make a shinui, a change, doing something in an unusual fashion so that people will not learn to be lenient, that's a better approach. We continue in the Gemara with the third issue that B'nai Bashkar had sent. What is the answer? Mace. What about burial of the dead on Yom Tov? Sholach Lehu, so Rav Menashia sent back to them. Mace lo yisaskube, lo yudoyin v'lo armoyin, lo v'yom tov rishon v'lo v'yom tov sheni. A corpse should not be dealt with. Not by Jews, not by Armoyin, not by Gentiles, not on the first day of Yom Tov, and not on the second day of Yom Tov. We should point out that the idea of first and second day of Yom Tov naturally applies to places outside of Israel, so where you have 2 days of Yom Tov. The second day of Yom Tov, technically speaking, is not on the same level of holiness as the first day of Yom Tov. The first day is Torah-based, the second day is rabbinic. Nevertheless, no room for leniency is what they are being taught. The Gemara asks, now this question you can see starts here at the bottom line, but the marking that we have indicates that it's a long question, so you see that it continues till the sixth line from the top of Omid Beis. Amy, is this so, that there is no room for leniency? V'amar Rav Yehuda bar Shila, v'amar Rav Yasi. Uvda have b'vei knishtu demoin, b'yom tov ha-somuch l'shabbos. Uvda means an incident took place. B'vei knishtu demoin, Moin is the name of a place in the shul of Moin, on Yom Tov. Yom Tov that was next to Shabbos. Now, that means we're talking about Yom Tov that was on either Friday or on Sunday, and the Gemara says, "Velo Yodano." Rav Yehuda tells us, "I don't know imilfanel milchara, if the Yom Tov in question was milfanel before it, meaning on Friday, or milchara after it, after the Shabbos on Sunday." The osu lukame de Rabbi Yochanan, the omru yisasku be amamin. The question of involving the burial of the corpse on either the Friday or the Sunday, which was Yom Tov, and Rabbi Yochanan said the burial shall be done by Gentiles. So you have the burial of a Jewish corpse taking place on Yom Tov. Rashi explains very importantly what the considerations may have been. So the Rashi at the top, Lo Yadani Mufnel, Im Chal Yom Tov Be'erev Shabbos, Umeis Bo Bayom. Was it a story involving someone that died on Yom Tov that very day? Umipnei Shelo Yuchlu Lis'asek Bo Lomochor, and because the next day is Shabbos, which is clearly forbidden to be engaged in burial on Shabbos. So you would have a situation, if this corpse was not tended to on Yom Tov, it would be lying there for 2 days, and without getting into any gory details, decomposition sets in, decay sets in. So therefore, to avoid that very unfortunate scenario, Rabbi Yochanan ruled, we will allow the burial done by Gentiles on that Friday, which was a Yom Tov, a holiday, so as to avoid the elongated non-burial state. Rashi continues, Im Lachrel v'humeis b'Shabbos, or the story that was being reported was a case where the deceased passed away on Shabbos itself, and the psak that Rabbi Yochanan gave was that on Sunday, Gentiles shall bury this corpse. And in that scenario, the permission was because it was already in an advanced state of decay, and therefore he said, let the Gentile bury him. In general, it goes without saying, I'm sure most of you already know, that a Jew is not allowed to request of a Gentile for him in general to do malachos on the Jew's behalf when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov. But here we're making an exception because the basic prohibition is, of course, rabbinic in nature. So in these cases, there's room for the rabbis to be lenient within their own rulings and allow the Gentile to work on behalf of the Jew. We continue, bearing in mind we're in the middle of a long question. V'omar Rava, Mace, Rava points out that a corpse that has been lying around, an example of that would be it died, a person died on Shabbos, and the next day was Yom Tov. So regarding that case of Mace, so again, here our markings are extremely important, and it's our markings in general are based on Rashi, so that you don't read, don't make the mistake by reading Mace Biyom Tov Rishon. That's a total mistake as far as Rashi is concerned. It's rather Mace means it's the case of Mace of someone who died on Shabbos. Now, what do we do? So, assuming that we're dealing with Shabbos that's followed by a Yom Tov, and in the course of the Gemara we'll see a reference made to Rosh Hashanah as well. So, Mace, the Yom Tov Rishon, V'yisaskubo Amamin. That means that on Yom Tov, which follows the Shabbos, so the Mace is now lying around for, it's in its second day, and that's it died on Shabbos, and now it's Yom Tov Rishon. So let Gentiles are the ones that will bury it. However, Biyom Tov Sheni, if we're talking about the day that follows Shabbos is a Yom Tov Sheni, which could very well be a case where Shabbos coincided with Yom Tov. So the day after, that Sunday, is the second day of Yom Tov, which, as we pointed out earlier, was a rabbinic level day. Yisaskubo Yisrael, Jews are allowed to engage in the burial. That's something that might be hard to imagine, but Jews themselves are allowed, even though it's Yom Tov, but it's Yom Tov Sheni. Jews are allowed to engage in the burial. V'afilu b'Yom Tov Sheni shel Rosh Hashanah, even if that second day is the second day of Rosh Hashanah, Masha'en kein b'beitza, which is not the case with regard to a different area of halacha, when an egg is laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we say that not only on the day that it's laid, the egg is prohibited based on the rules of Muktzah, but the second day of Rosh Hashanah as well, that egg laid on the first day would be prohibited. That is a special halacha regarding Rosh Hashanah because of the seriousness, or the way we view the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah as being what we call Yom HaRichta, one long day. So that way of looking at Rosh Hashanah does not apply to the case of the corpse vis-a-vis the second day of Rosh Hashanah, where in the case of burial, the second day of Rosh Hashanah takes on the same leniency as other second days of Yom Tov. You notice we've been involved with a rather lengthy explanation here. Our long marking is helpful to remind us we're in the middle of a question, and that is, why is it that Rav Menashe sent to the Bnei Bashkar that regarding the mace, they had asked about a mace regarding mace on Yom Tov, what do you do? And Rav Menashe sent to them, you can't do anything. But after all that we've just learned, there's quite a bit of room for tending to the corpse when it comes to Yom Tov. First day Yom Tov, second day Yom Tov, we saw that you can tend to its burial. So why was that not sent to them? Answer, you guessed it. Fi she'enon b'nei Torah. Omer Rabbi Yovin bar Rav Huna, And before we go on, it just struck me now as we're speaking, a very serious and very unfortunate matter the Gemara just shared with us, and that is that when it comes to the burial of the dead, and there's a very, very important, fundamental halacha that governs this area, and it's called Kavod HaBrios, the honor that the Torah expects us to bestow upon human beings. Kavod HaBrios. It's a very important, a very profound idea. You find it in numerous Gemaras, how much respect we accord to human beings, insofar as even many areas of halacha that are of a rabbinic nature, where there's rabbinic stringency, when it comes to Kavod HaBrios, we are lenient to preserve human dignity. However, when you're up against the situation of Torah ignorance, we see that even such an area as significant as human dignity is concerned, we're going to have to compromise on that when it comes to people that don't pay proper respect, proper diligence to halacha and its practice. So, again, something to think about as we go on. Omar Rabbi Yochanan bar Avuna, Omar Rav Chama bar Guria, Misatef Odom Bekila Ubekaskaseha V'yotzu Shusarabim B'Shabbos V'Eino Choshesh. A person, Misatef, can cloak himself in a kila. A kila is a bed canopy. So, in effect, it's a sheet of material. So he can wrap himself in this. And its straps, the kila, we made a brief reference to the cords that are a draw cord that's attached to the kila. So the person is cloaking himself in the kila. Imagine yourself wrapping yourself in a sheet, serving as a robe. And this sheet has ropes, drawstrings attached to it. You can do that, wear it out into a public thoroughfare on Shabbos. And Eino Choshesh means, and you don't have to worry about the fact that the strings, the drawstrings, are attached to it. Now, what could the problem be? Not so much the sheet. The sheet you're wearing as an article of clothing, but the drawstring, that's not serving you as an article of clothing. So are you not, in effect, carrying the drawstring from the private domain into the public domain, which is a Shabbos violation? And yet Rabbi Ovin is teaching us here that that's okay. So the Gemara asks, why should it be okay? My shnomi de Rav Huna, what is different about this case of the person cloaked in the kila with the drawstring hanging from it, from the case of Rav Huna? The Yom Rav Huna, Yom Rav, Hayotze Betalis, She'eino mitzuyeses kilchusa b'Shabbos, a person who goes out on Shabbos wearing a talis, that's a proper garment that has tzitzis fringes that a person places in the corner of a four-cornered garment. However, in this case we're dealing with the tzitzis are not done properly. That's tzitzis that are not kilchusa. Chayov chatos. A person is in violation of Shabbos on a Torah level. A Torah level Shabbos violation by wearing a garment with these, we'll call, improper strings attached to it. So why are tzitzis shelo kilchusa more serious than the drawstring attached to the kila? Answer, tzitzis legabi talis hashivi velo batli. The tzitzis strings are significant, are important, so they don't become null and voided with respect to the talis to which they are attached. They maintain their own significance. And Rashi points out, what is the significance of these strings? So Rashi says, Mishum deshel tchelesein. The tzitzis spoken about here have tchelis. They have the tchelis, the dye, the bluish dye, that is supposed to be part of the tzitzis strings. There are white strings and blue strings. So the tchelis was an expensive substance, expensive dye, and therefore they are not botel. They don't lose their own inherent significance. And as a result of that, they are what's called a masui. They are a burden. And for that, one is chayav, is guilty, carrying it outside from a private to a public domain. However, honey, the drawstring attached to the kila, lo chashivi, ubatli, it doesn't have such significance. And therefore, it becomes botel, it loses significance and becomes void to the kila that you are wearing. And since it's okay to wear the kila outside, the string is viewed simply as part of the kila of that sheet. Omar Rabo bar Rav Huna. Ma'arim odom ala mishameres biyomtiv litlos bo rimonim v'toyle bo shmorim. This is essentially, we should have pointed out, this is a new discussion. On the side, we have a topic heading, Ha'aroma. Ha'aroma is a legal trick. Ha'aroma b'klias mishameres aliba de rabbonan. The osru litlos lechatchila biyomtov litzorech shmorim. We have learned already, not today, but in our previous shiurim, that the rabbonan are of the opinion, unlike Rabbi Eliezer, that one is not allowed to set up a strainer, a screen which serves as a strainer over a vessel on yomtov for the purpose of shmorim, of grape residue, grape lees, through the strainer there would continue to drip forth wine. So that is, it's forbidden to set up a strainer on Yom Tov according to the Rabbanan. And Rashi points out that their objection is not a Torah based objection. There's no problem of oihel, as the Gemara already said, but there is a problem of uvda d'chol, of doing something on Yom Tov that you ordinarily would do on a weekday. And when it comes to Yom Tov, we want to treat Yom Tov with greater significance and severity and honor than you would treat a weekday. So there are activities and that are classified as what's called uvda d'chol, weekday behavior that we don't do on Yom Tov. So that's the basis of the Rabbanan. Now, Rabba tells us that within this rabbinic realm of Uvda D'Choyl, you can do a trick, and that is set up a strainer in order to be a place to hold rimonim, a type of fruit. And after you set up the strainer for the purpose of holding the rimonim, litlos bo rimonim, to suspend within it rimonim, so then you can put the grape lees in it, the shmorim. Now we continue in this discussion, which will continue till the Mishnah. We have some markings. Let's take a look at our Mivneh heading. The double underline will highlight Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, we've written Machmir, Rav Ashi is of the opinion that when you do this trick, and we said the basis of the trick is to do it for a non-uvda d'chol reason, the setting up of the strainer and then the subsequent placing of the shmorim in it is the uvda d'chol problem. That's a type of weekday behavior, setting up strainers and then putting in it the grape residue. So Rabba told us you can get around that by setting up the strainer for pomegranates, if you assume that rimonim are translated as pomegranates. Rav Ashi now comes with an element of stringency within this leniency. However, be careful. And Rav Ashi tells us that you have to make it obvious to anyone who's looking that you have set up the strainer for a heter purpose, for an allowed purpose. So Rav Ashi tells us, demonstrate. Do this in a way that it's clear to any onlooker that you're not doing it for the restricted reason. As the Gemara goes on, we will see triangles, And the triangles represent Kushios HaMechuvonos L'Rav Ashi. These are questions directed at Rav Ashi. D'lo bo'inon b'hechreach she'aso l'etera. Where from these incidents or questions that are presented, it doesn't seem that you have to make this demonstration that you did it for the heter, for the allowed reason. So let's continue in the Gemara now. The first double underline, Omar Rav Ashi, v'hu detola ba rimonim. After you set up the strainer, we expect you to place in it the pomegranates. At first, put pomegranates in it. So people who might be looking will say, oh, he set up the strainer for holding pomegranates. After that, then put the shmorim in it. The Gemara asks, my shno meha desanya. What is different about this case with the strainer and the case involving beer making? The source that we're about to learn touches on the issue of beer making. In general, beer making involves mixing ingredients and then leaving them sit for a while. One could easily understand that it would not be proper to make beer on Yom Tov when the sole purpose in your making of the beer is to use it after Yom Tov. So we have a source that says Matilin Shechar b'moed. Moed means chola moed. L'tzorach ha-moed, you can Matilin Shechar is to set up the beer manufacture, the beer making on chola moed if your purpose is to benefit from the beer maybe a couple days later, but still on chol hamoed. So you're doing this action on chol hamoed for the benefit of chol hamoed. Shelo l'tzorach hamoed aser. However, to set up the beer making on chol hamoed for after chol hamoed, that would not be allowed. Echod shechor tamor ve'echod shechor sorim, whether it be a date-based beer or a barley-based beer. The source continues, Afal pi sheyesh lohen yoshan, marim v'shoise min hachodosh. You have here a case where people have a stockpile of beer. Yoshan means they have old. In other words, they have already beer. Marim is we'll call it the trick. And you can make beer, even though you already have beer, you can make the beer on Chol HaMoed. So, what are we saying over here? Saying, well, even though you've got beer, you can set up the beer making on Chol HaMoed. And since we saw on the books there is this option for making beer on Chol HaMoed for Chol HaMoed, so go ahead, make beer. Have in mind, let's say, for Chol HaMoed, and it doesn't necessarily seem from this source that you're going to necessarily drink that beer that you're making on Chol HaMoed on Chol HaMoed. So Rashi points out very briefly here, Marim v'sheisim min ha-chodosh, alma below shum ho-chocha mutter laharim. So here, without anything that it is an obvious demonstration, you don't have any obvious demonstration here of your making of the beer, in making of the beer that it's going to be for Chol HaMoed, and yet you're allowed to do this. Ha'aroma. The Gemara answers, what is the difference between the beer case and the Mishameres case? Hosam lo mukha milsa. In the beer making, it's not clear that you are doing something forbidden, something problematic. What do we mean by that? A person who sees you making beer on Chol HaMoed can easily come to the conclusion that you're making it for Chol HaMoed. Not everyone doesn't know that you have a stockpile of beer. So when they see you making beer on Chol HaMoed, it's very easy for people to come to a proper conclusion or a heter conclusion that you're making it for Chol HaMoed, which the source said is okay. Hacha mucha milsa. However, here in the case of the Mishameres, why do people set up screens over vessels. Well, it's obvious to people that you're setting it up for shmorim. So therefore, if the shmorim of the grape lees, and we said that is also to do on Yom Tov. So unless you demonstrate that you set it up for a heter purpose, for holding the rimonim, if you don't make that demonstration, people are left with the sole prohibited conclusion of prohibition. And therefore, you've got, in the case of the strainer, to make the demonstration of heter. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omru le Rabbanan le Rav Ashi. Here we're presenting this as a question, even though the tone of the Gemara doesn't seem to be a question, but in the context of the Gemara, we are learning it as a question, and we've even used a long question marking for this section. The Rabbanan pointed out to Rav Ashi, Chazi mor hai tzubar Rabbanan? Do you see this Talmud Chacham? Rav Huna bar Chiyun Shmei, the Amri Law, another version of the name is Rav Huna bar Chalvon Shmei. Two things that we want to point out. Number one, the Shaka Bora de Tuma Umonach de Barza de Donna, the Omar Latsnue Komichavna. The Shokal, he took Bora de Tuma. Bora de Tuma, Rashi explains as being the central stem of a garlic, of a head of garlic. Rashi, or more accurately, tsela shel shum would be a garlic clove, a piece of garlic. And he used this piece of garlic as a stopper to repair a barrel of wine that has a hole in it. Rashi says, Umonach bebarza dedona, mokom shiesh bo nekev bechovis, vayayin yoytzei, Noisnoi Sham Bishabas Listom. This is a hole in a barrel through which wine flowed, and this is on Shabbos, and he put this garlic clove into the hole to seal it up. Vahavi Kimisakane, and that's like repairing it. It's like repairing a barrel that has a hole in it. What's not 100% clear to me is, are we referring to a hole that developed as a result of a problem, or is it the hole that was the official hole for wine dispensing? Nevertheless, from what we have to emphasize is what Rashi says. It was, he put it in for sealing up the hole, which seemed to present a problem. Otherwise, the wine would have gone to loss. And as a result, it's like misaking, like repair. And one knows that to repair a vessel on Shabbos is strictly prohibited. So what did he do? He took this garlic clove, stuffed the hole in it, and told us, and he said, "Latsnue komechavna," that he's putting the garlic clove in this hole simply as a means of storing the garlic clove. Latsnue is literally to hide it or to keep it away. And he did something else. Now, before we go on, though, if a person is entitled to take a garlic clove and put it in a drawer, so instead of putting it in a drawer, he put it in the side of this barrel. What else? Number two, v'ozil v'noyim b'mavra. This tzurbim rabbonan ravuna, he went and noyim is to go to sleep. B'mavra, on a boat. Boat, in this case, a type of boat or ferry. Rashi says, Sfino Rechovo. It's a wide type boat, Hasil Avor Hamayim, to cross water. So we can explain a type of ferry. So he went to sleep on a ferry. V'ovar Lahach Gisa, the Gemara continues, and he then crossed to the other side. In other words, there was a Gentile ferry captain that ferried the boat across to the other side. And when he got to the other side, the seer Piri, he went to go and watch his vineyard. He had a vineyard on the other side to watch it, to serve as a guard of his vineyard. And all of this is taking place on Shabbos. The Omar and this Rav Huna, who went to sleep on the boat, he then told us, V'omar, ano l'meinam komechav. No, I went on the boat to go to sleep. It was a convenient place to go to sleep. But in the meantime, what happened? He was ferried across a river on Shabbos by the Gentile captain, which is something that we'll say is obviously prohibited to do. One can't get on a boat on Shabbos to be ferried across deliberate decision. Yet he did this type of kind of trick. We'll say he went on the boat to sleep without. That's the story, at least, that he told us. And this is being pointed out to Ravashi. These kind of, we'll call these tricks. Basically, you've got the repairing of the barrel and the ferrying across the river by Gentile. So, isn't this a problem? And we saw before that Ravashi was apprehensive with regard to things that are of a trick nature. Omar Lahu, so Rav Ashi responds, Ha Romo Kamras, are you describing to me a case of a Ha Romo? The trick? Ha Romo Bidurabonon Hi. First of all, this is a Ha Romo in an area of halacha that is of a rabbinic nature. In other words, in the worst case scenario, a person, let's say, went on a boat to be ferried across by a Gentile. So that would be a rabbinic violation. Or a person put a garlic in the side of a barrel with the expressed intention of keeping the hole sealed with a piece of garlic. That also would be a rabbinic violation. So we're dealing with what's on the worst case of rabbinic violation, with a Talmud Chacham, which is what we featured in this story, and that's why we dashed the light Tzur B'Rabbanan a few lines above. He won't come to do the rabbinic violation in a straight out L'chadchila fashion, and therefore, since he won't come to do it in that straight out fashion, I can tolerate the Ha'aroma that he did. Let's see this in Rashi. Haroma b'derabonon hi, hachi garsinon, ha haroma lav b'isura d'oraisa. We're reading Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines. The haroma described here is not a haroma on an isur d'oraisa, on a Torah level prohibition. Hu, elo b'isura d'rabonon. We're dealing with in a realm that's of a rabbinic nature. The inami ovid mamish b'laroma. In this case, if he would do so straight out, without any trick, he would have, as we say, the worst case, he would have been in violation of a rabbinic prohibition. Since we're dealing with someone who is a surabonon, which is the opposite, if you will, of the Einon B'nai Torah type people that we saw described earlier. So since Kivan Surabonon Hu, lo achmiru ole, therefore, since he's doing it in the haroma fashion, they did not object. He wouldn't come to do a straight-out rabbinic violation in front of everybody, straight-out without a haroma. Therefore, in his case, we can allow the situation. The Mishnah. Noisnin mayim agabi hashmorim. Bishvil Sheet Solu. If you had a strainer set up before Shabbos, and you have the grape sediment, the grape lees in there, you can pour water over the grapes. Bishvil Sheet Solu. Rashi mentions Sheet Slulin Lozuv. For our purposes, it would mean that the water poured through over the grapes will absorb, we'll say, the taste of the grapes, and the solu in general means it should become clear. It would mean in this case that the grape sediment will become clear of the grape content, of the grape juice content, as the water is flowing through. Umisaninin es hayayin besudrin. Sudrin are pieces of cloth. So you, and it says, the Mishnah is saying you can strain wine through cloth. pour wine through the cloth. And ubikfifo mitzris. A kfifa is a basket. Mitzris is made from reed material, which if you pour liquid through a reed basket, so naturally the liquid will flow through, and the fact that the openings are very small will serve as a type of strainer. The noisnin beitza b'mesanena shel chardol, you can pour an egg through a chardol strainer. The oisin anamolim b'shabbos, and you can prepare anamolim, which the Gemara will deal with later. Rashi offers a French word for that. That we'll touch on later. Before we go further in the Gemara, the Rashi on the beitza, on the pouring of the egg through the chardol strainer, Rashi says, v'noisin beitza b'mesanenes, number one, shachardol nosun bo listanein. There is mustard. Chardol is translated often as mustard. Mustard and mustard here is mustard seed, which is a very fine powdery type substance. And you pour the egg over the mustard substance that's in the strainer. The coletus es hapsoles. The strainer will withhold any debris. The af habeitza hachelmon shelo notef. The yolk, which is a thinner type material than the white and the albumin of the egg, so the chamon, which is a more liquidy substance, will pass through the strainer, together and absorbing the color of the chardol. The chelbon shukoshur nishar lamavi. Chelbon, the albumin, which is a thicker substance, will remain above. And so the purpose of this is to, as Rashi says, vavi lechardol lemare, the yolk will add color to the chardol, and that's what you are doing here. The second pshat, Rabbeinu Alevi Pirish, sinuno shel beitzo l'stoch tafshil hi, v'lo l'toch chardol, the straining of the egg, or the pouring of the egg, is into a dish of food. That's the tafshil, and it's not into chardol. Essential chardol, who the shori, he's using a mesanes shel chardol. It's a mustard strainer. The shori mishum shinui, because it's a kind of unusual thing that you're doing. And this changes the color of the tafshil. The point that Rashi made, umislabein hatafshil, we mentioned change color, but maybe more accurately it would mean it becomes whiter. In the Mishnah, we see Rabbi Huda regarding the anamolin. Mishnah says, Rabbi Huda Omer, b'shabes b'kois, b'yom tov b'login, u'v'moyed b'chovis. Regarding the preparation of anamolin, if it's on Shabbos, so then a small amount can be made, bekos is a cup. If on Yom Tov, then a login is a type of flask, which is larger than a kos, but smaller than a chovis. And b'moyed, if you're making the anamolim on Chol HaMoed, so even in a barrel. Rabbi Tzolik Omer, hakol lefi ha'orchin. It all depends on the number of guests. The Gemara. On the side, we've entitled this Misanenes. Misanenes is a strainer. Omar Ziri, Noisin Odom, Yayin Solul, Umayim Tzlun Lesoch HaMeshemeres B'Shabes Veinu Choshesh. A person can place clear wine, clear water, in a strainer on Shabbos, and he doesn't have to worry. In general, the strainer could present a problem of borer, of separating the debris from that which is good, which is an isur on Shabbos. It's prohibited to engage in separation of debris from good, but this is clear anyway, so one can pour it through the strainer and doesn't have to worry. Aval akurin lo, if it's turbid, if it's cloudy, that liquid that has debris in it, so that would not be allowed. Meisvei, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Toreid Odom Chovishliayin, a person can stir up a barrel of wine, Yena Ushmarel, the wine with its lees, the noising the Toicham Shemeres, b'Shabbos Veinuchosh, she can pour it through a strainer on Shabbos and doesn't have to worry. Well, that contradicts Ziri's teaching, that if it's Akurin, though, and here we have a case of Akurin, and it's allowed. Tirgam Ziri, Ziri, who was just challenged, he explains this source, Bein Hagisos Shanu. This source is talking about the wine pressing season. Gisos Agas is a wine press. During the wine pressing season, all wine was murky to begin with. Only after wine sits for a while does it become clear. So during the wine pressing season, the wine people drank was murky. So they would drink it with the shmorim anyway. Therefore, pouring it through the strainer isn't considered a tikkun, isn't considered an improvement, because as we said, they would have drunk it anyway with the debris in it. And therefore, it's allowed on Shabbos during wine pressing season. Misanin esayin besudrin. The Mishnah mentioned pouring wine through cloth. Omar Rav Simi Barchio bevat shelo yaase guma. It would appear guma is a depression, so that one should, when he's pouring the wine through this the sudrin on Shabbos, he should make sure that the cloth is taut and taut over the barrel or the receptacle vessel. Ubikfifo mitris, pouring the wine through a reed basket. Omar Rav Chiya Barashi, Omar Rav, uvavad shelo yagbia mikarkiisoi shel kli tefach. If you're pouring through the basket, you're pouring wine through the basket, obviously the basket is suspended over a receiving vessel. So Rav Chiya tells us that the basket must be placed rather close to the bottom of the receiving vessel. It should not be more than a tefach, more than a handbreadth from the bottom, so that the bottom of this basket is going to be very close to the bottom of the receiving vessel. Otherwise, we have a problem of an oihel, of the construction of a structure, and which is defined in many places, and we've seen it in our limud already. A tefach is the dimension that one must avoid. Omar Rav, Hai Parvanko. Parvanko is a piece of cloth, a beged. A beged is most often translated as a piece of clothing, but for our purposes, it would be a piece of cloth. A palge de kuba, shori akule kuba osir. If the cloth is spread over part of the barrel, the kuba is a barrel, then it's allowed. Then there's no ohel problem. However, if it's spread entirely across the entire opening, then it is osir. It's forbidden. Amar Papa, lo nahadik inish tsinaisa bepume de kuzni de chavita mishum de merci kim mishameres. Tsinaisa, those are small twigs. One should not stuff a collection of small twigs bepume in the opening de kuzni. Kuzni is a small clay vessel that you would pour from a barrel into this kuzni. So one should not stuff into the opening of the of this small vessel the twigs, because you, if you have a fairly good imagination, you've just created a strainer, because it looks like mishum de merci kimishameres, and it looks like you're making a strainer. Rashi says this is actually a very effective strainer, and we've already seen that one should not set up a strainer on Shabbos. Debei Rav Papa Shafu Shichra Mimona Lemona. Shafu is a process of pouring slowly, a gradual pouring. They would pour Shichra's beer from Mimona Lemona, from one vessel into another. Now, by pouring slowly, the debris, the residue, remains in the original vessel. And the Gemara continues, Omar le Ravacha midifti the Ravina, ho'iko nitzotzos. So granted, the debris remains in the original vessel, but what happens when you get to the end? The nitzosos are the last drops, and if you are going to be pouring slowly, and you're at a point at which the last drops, which contain contain the bulk of the debris, and you're pouring slowly, Rashi points out, it's then clear that your action is for the purpose of separating, and that is borer. Borer is a prohibited activity on Shabbos. So is this not a problem? Omar le Rav Acham. The Gemara answers: Sinonos lebei Rav Popa lo chashivi. Rav Popa was a wealthy man. He was actually a beer manufacturer, and the last droplets he didn't care about. In other words, they would throw it out, so that in the case of Rav Popa's household, the problem didn't even begin. He wouldn't be concerned about the last drop. He would leave it in the original vessel and eventually throw it out. The Nosnin Beitza v'Misanenes. Toni Yankiv Korcha teaches Lefi She'ein Oisin Oisa Ela Legavein. The Mishnah spoke about pouring an egg through a Misanenes Shochardol. Why is this allowed? Why is one allowed to pour the egg through the Misanenes Shochardol? So Yankiv Korcha says, because the fi she'ein oisin oisel legavein, this is at the top of Kuf Mem Omer Aleph, because your purpose is not for borer, your purpose is not for separating the debris from the food, but it's to have the chelmon, the yolk color, the orange or yellow color, that color be added to the food that you are preparing, or to the chardol that you are preparing. And therefore, since there's no borer intent, there's no separation of debris from good intent, it's therefore allowed. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.